Don't have time to read that research paper you saved? Chelsea and Olivia want to help you out. We know how it is. That's why we read it for you. Welcome to the Exercise Science Too Long Didn't Read podcast.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going? Today, we have endurance, muscle hypertrophy, functional overload.
Whoa.
All the things. So in this episode, we're going to discuss the question of whether muscle growth is sustained with endurance training.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
First, we've got another episode with a lot of big terms, complex language. So we're going to break down some of those definitions.
So the first word is mTOR. It stands for mechanistic target of rapamycin. So that's a signaling pathway that acts as a regulator for protein synthesis and insulin receptors in the body. So basically, it's your muscle building or muscle building regulation. So a higher number of mTOR is what we want because it builds more muscle.
So that's the internet traffic.
Sure.
Okay.
The next word is mitogen activated protein kinase. It's not really a word, is it? It's a phrase, but what it means is it's specific to amino acids serine and threonine. So the acronym is MAPK. So the MAPK is
MAPKTS.
The MAPSK.
MAPSKTS.
Are involved directly with cellular response to mitogens, such as osmotic stress, heat shock, pro-inflammatory cytokines, which can increase with overtraining. So the MAPKs are the bad things that you don't want to increase because it's what shows up when you're overtraining.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. And then you have functional overload. Less complicated word, but what it means is not what I expected it to mean when I was reading this paper. So when I think functional overload, I think of something with strength training, which it is, but this paper was done with mice. So it's an experimentally induced ablating synergistic muscle. So what they're doing is after the mouse has died, they're taking the muscle and basically exercising it really hard so that the muscle can grow itself in size and in strength.
Huh.
It's very interesting. So it's a known and widely used model of resistance exercise for mice and other rodents that are used in research for hypertrophy and metabolic improvement.
Yeah, when I hear functional overload, it makes me think of like functional training, which was described to me as you're carrying groceries and you need to use your foot to push the door open, or you're lifting a box up onto a shelf, something like that. It's a way of exercising to simulate movements that you would do in your daily life. And so if you build up some base strength for those same movements, then when you go to do them in real life, you're less likely to injure yourself when you do that. So functional overload would make me think that you're overloading. So kind of what you were saying about...
Yeah, you're overloading the muscle.
Overtraining and pushing it to its max.
And then synergistic unilateral ablation. So the ablation of the synergist is in the definition. Why would they reuse the same word? Don't ask me. But ablation of the synergist for compensatory hypertrophy consists of the surgical removal of all or part of the muscle to generate a chronic functional overload.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I understood less than 1% of that sentence.
I know. So basically, the functional overload is what they do, like what we were talking about earlier, like with they take the muscle and they cause the overload. So the process of causing the overload is the synergistic unilateral ablation. So
oh, okay.
that's just the process of making the muscle bigger and causing the overload. And then the interference effect. So it's a thing where muscle strength and hypertrophy is inhibited by endurance training. So this paper is looking at the interference effect. It's looking at this inhibition that has been found in muscle strength and hypertrophy by endurance training.
I think I can follow that. So it's
muscle strength and hypertrophy is inhibited by the endurance training.
Yeah.
So the paper that I am going to talk about today is by Shirai, Obara, and Takimasa. Forgive me if I said your names incorrectly. This paper was published this year in 2021, and the title is Effect of Endurance Exercise Duration on Muscle Hypertrophy Induced by Functional Overload.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Sure.
This study looks at the difference of muscle mechanistic target of rapamycin or the mTOR that we talked about earlier, which was what?
The, pick me, I know.
What was it?
The mTOR is the internet lines.
Yes.
The delivery system, the roadway, the pathway.
For what?
For the things.
Protein synthesis.
Yeah, that thing. I knew it all the time.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yeah.
So they looked at the mTOR in mice plantaris muscle during different endurance regimens paired with muscle overloading. So to answer the question, does dual training actually hinder muscle strength and hypertrophy in with the interference effects suggest?
So is this kind of the age-old debate of, you know, bodybuilders are big and bulky and they're strong,
mm-hmm.
but typically they're not very fast. They tend to have a hard time doing cardio exercises. So it's the question of how do you get big, or at least as big as you want to be, while also being able to, in my case, walk up a couple flights of stairs without feeling like you're going to die.
Yes. In this study, the mice had a 3-day familiarization phase with using the treadmill at 10 to 20 meters per minute, and then the exercise and endurance regimen of 30 or 90 minutes in length for 5 days per week, 20 meter per minute for 2 weeks. So basically 10 days of 30 or 90 minutes. So they basically were looking at the time of endurance and how it affects the interference effect.
God, that's a long time. Mm-hmm. Also, I was picturing mice on a little tiny treadmill. And
oh, yes.
It made my heart giggle a little bit.
I would love to see this study done in person.
Like, I know it's sad, but I enjoy those videos with the obese pets in the little water treadmill.
Yes.
Box thing.
So there were three groups in this study. There was the non-exercise, non-overload group, which was your baseline group or your comparison group.
So just normal mice doing their mm-hmm. thing on a normal day.
Yep, okay. Exactly. And then you have your endurance of 30 minutes and overload group, and then your endurance of 90 minutes and an overload group.
The overachievers.
Yes, the overachievers.
Your
endurance.
Fitness.
Your marathon runners.
Your enthusiastic fitness enthusiasts.
Yes, the very enthusiastic
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Because even within marathon runners, you know, I've got some friends that do a couple of marathons a year, and then there's my fiance's grandpa, I think, at least used to do several, plus bike, plus, you know, all of these other things. So I would almost put them in different categories too.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So for the results, they found a significant change in muscle weight and body weight in both the intervention groups. mTOR signaling was increased in the endurance 30-minute group, whereas the 90-minute group had an increase of the oxidative stress markers, which were the overtraining markers.
Hmm.
So hypertrophy, which is your muscle's size and strength, increased in all groups. So there was no difference in the AMPAC or the AMPAK levels, which we talked about earlier, what that is. Do you remember?
I just remember trying to make fun of the acronym MAPKKTS.
So it's that. It's the mitogen activated protein kinase.
Sure.
Those are the chemicals, if you will, that increase during overtraining.
Oh, yeah. So the osmotic stress, heat shock. So this would be what kicks in when you're starting to get heat stroke and things like that.
Yes.
Okay.
And the respiratory mitochondrial chain complexes increased in the endurance 90-minute group, meaning that the respiratory muscles increased in the 90-minute group, whereas the 30-minute group, they did not have an increase in the respiratory muscles.
What's a respiratory muscle? Like your lungs?
No. So the respiratory muscles are the muscles that are in your ribs and around your ribs and your diaphragm.
Oh, and the ones that make your ribs open and close.
Yes.
So you can breathe.
Yeah. So the muscles that help you take big breaths, and then your heart is a part of the respiratory system as well. So they could have been talking about the heart muscle as well.
That seems to fit more, mm-hmm. but probably all inclusive.
Just like with marathon runners, which is what I kept thinking of with this 90-minute group. They have strong respiratory muscles and strong hearts. So in conclusion, shorter bouts of endurance training may contribute to muscle hypertrophy, whereas a longer session like the 90-minute group can cause more stress in the muscles and can even inhibit hypertrophy and muscle strength.
So it almost sounds like this is pro HIIT and Tabata training.
Not necessarily. It's more pro doing shorter bouts of endurance training. So like what I talked about in the last episode, a combination training of doing strength one day and maybe doing like a 30-minute run the next day.
Versus doing two-a-days every day.
Well, you can do two-a-days. It's just not focusing on doing a marathon at the same time of trying to become an Olympic lifter or a bodybuilder.
Why not?
Well, this paper shows exactly why right here.
Don't ask me why, but I pictured a pair of Siamese twins who just couldn't agree. One of them wanted to run and one of them wanted to be a bodybuilder.
I'd love it.
But the other one, of course, you know, has to somewhat be involved.
So endurance training increased the weight of hypertrophic muscle caused by the functional overload, regardless of exercise duration. So, however, the exercise duration did not affect the mTOR signaling, which is that protein synthesis. In contrast...
So longer doesn't necessarily mean stronger.
Right.
And if anybody tells you that you cannot gain muscle mass with endurance training, you can tell them that's incorrect.
Exactly. Exactly.
See? Fun stuff at parties. You're welcome.
In contrast, long-term endurance promoted mitochondrial biogenesis, even during muscle hypertrophy, and it increased the protein degradation, oxidative stress, and ubiquitin.
I've heard the word ubiquitous, but I just realized I don't know that I've ever seen it spelled. Do you have words like that? Like you've always yes. heard it and then you see it written out and you're like, wait, that's what that word? That's how you spell that word?
That word's
that's
weird.
That's so weird. So with ubiquitous, that ubiquitin makes sense. It's ubiquitin.
So ubiquitin, which may also suppress muscle hypertrophy.
So that, for
that me. That was me reading a quote from the paper.
I was going to say, for me... I need to, an ADHD skill is you take a big thing and break it into smaller chunks. So I need to break that down. So
okay, let's break it down.
In contrast, long-term EE promoted mitochondrial biogenesis. So I know what in contrast means. Mm-hmm. So opposite of what we said before, or what they said before. Long-term, what's long-term EE?
Endurance exercise.
Okay. So our 90-minute group promoted mitochondrial biogenesis. What is that?
Well, you know what the mitochondria is, yes. Right? In the cell.
That's that little thing that no scientist has been able to figure out if we've always had it, mm-hmm. or if it joined the party somewhere in our lizard soup mix.
You know what genesis means, right?
It's an excellent band from a few decades ago.
Yes. But genesis is like creating something, right?
Oh, I should have known that. That's fair.
So it's the mitochondrial creation of itself.
So mitochondrial cells making more mitochondrial cells?
That's how I read it.
Okay. So in contrast, the long-term endurance exercise promoted mitochondrials making more mitochondrials.
Biogenesis is the hypothesis that living matter arises only from other living matter. So it's the mitochondria creating something, not necessarily itself.
So the theory that the chicken had to come from... Nope. The egg had to come from the chicken.
Yeah.
The chicken could have come from something else. I guess it would still work the other way. The egg could have come from a lizard, but a chicken comes out of the egg because of some weird, biological mishap during... Never mind. I was trying to make some sort of a, hey, that answers the chicken and the or the egg question, but it still doesn't. We're in an endless loop.
It doesn't work.
Come on, science. Answer my questions. We have these big existential...
existential.
I couldn't say it.
Existential.
Existential crisis. Okay. So let's try that again. So in contrast, long-term endurance exercise promoted mitochondrials making more mitochondrials or making more of something, even during muscle hypertrophy. So the mitochondrial biogenesis is still occurring when muscles are doing the thing to get bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. And increased protein degradation. So protein within the cells or in your bloodstream or what's happening? I know what degradation, it's degrading. It's the
decomposing
pencil eraser that gets mm-hmm. smaller and smaller over time until you have the unusable nub.
So flat the, it's with the talking metal about thing. It's talking about protein in the cells. So the increased protein degradation. So the decrease of protein, basically.
I wonder if the mitochondrial biogenesis uses protein. Or if it's just part of the hypertrophy, or both. So we've got, it's so funny. Increased protein degradation. They could have just said, and a decrease of protein. I mean, I get why they need to be specific, but that's how I would flip.
Yeah.
It's not a double negative, but it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a positive on a negative. Very strange. So the next thing is the oxidative stress and ubiquitin. So oxidative stress, would that be a stress response of sorts caused by low oxygen? And we would have low oxygen because we're using it?
Basically, yes.
Okay. So we're using protein, we're using oxygen. What's ubiquitin?
Ubiquitin is a small protein that exists in all eukaryotic cells. So it performs some functions that conjugation to a large range of target proteins. So ubiquitin is a protein itself, and it consists of 76 amino acids and has a molecular... So it's just another form of protein.
Okay. So... now that we've kind of broken it down, it makes more sense. So long-term endurance exercise promoted mitochondrial biogenesis despite the muscle hypertrophy occurring, and which in what we think in theory is using protein and oxygen and these the ubiquitin and the other protein. So we're using all of our stores of essential parts. I don't want to say nutrients, just
essential functions.
Yeah. We're using all of the functions that need whichever fuel source they need to happen. We're using all of that up. And so that in turn can suppress muscle hypertrophy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the context for someone like me that I'm just working out. It's the, just because I have time to do a longer workout doesn't mean I should.
Right.
How hard did I work? How long did I already work? It's okay to rest.
That was a great summary.
Thank you.
That was very good. That shows everything that you've learned today in today's episode.
It also gives an insight into how my brain processes complex information.
Mm-hmm.
I have to break it down. I have to restate it and go, okay, this is how that makes sense to me. Am I correct in my understanding? And if not,
let's try again.
Yeah. Let's find the part where I went through the wrong door and we'll get it. So I like it. It makes sense and it fits. And it's not necessarily something that you would just inherently know.
Well, thank you all for listening today.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good one.
Yeah.
I feel smarter.
Smarter, not harder. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Later.
Thank you for listening to the Exercise Science TLDR podcast show. If you want to hear more from us, please write a review and subscribe. Join us online at exerciscienctldr.com. Remember, if it's too long and you didn't read it, we read it so you don't have to.